Good morning. My name is Teresa, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the first quarter 2018 results call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Ms. Maria Lee, you may begin your conference.
Thanks, Teresa. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us. I'm joined today by our Chairman, President, and Chief Executive Officer, Dave Nord, and our Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, Bill Sperry. Hubbell announced its first quarter results for 2018 this morning. The press release and earnings slide materials have been posted to the investor section of our website at www.hubbell.com. Please note that our comments this morning may include statements related to the expected future results of our company and are forward-looking statements as defined by the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Therefore, please note the discussion of forward-looking statements in our press release and consider it incorporated by reference into this call. In addition, comments may also include non-GAAP financial measures. Those measures are reconciled to the comparable GAAP measures and are included in the press release and the earnings slide materials. Now let me turn the call over to Dave.
Okay. Thanks, Maria. Thanks, everybody, for joining us this morning. You see from our press release this morning, it's certainly been a busy quarter, but a productive one as well. We've seen some strong top-line results, but, of course, you know, the good news always has some, you know, offsets. And as we talked back in our investor day earlier in March, you know, we've got the price cost challenges that we're fighting through, but I think, you know, we see that, you know, more broadly in the market. And then the good news, we've got a tax tailwind, you know, benefiting us and I think benefiting the overall economy. And of course, you know, the biggest level of activity in the quarter has certainly been the acquisition and the continued efforts in the integration of Aclara. Certainly the largest in our history. I think all those things certainly contribute to a challenge. It's all good news, particularly on the Aclara side, but I think all of that activity certainly adds to the complexity of telling our story. And so we're going to try to work through that the best we can. We've heard from you all on different topics. I've had some discussions, and we try to address a lot of those, obviously. Appreciate that input. But one of the things we also want to do is make sure that we're not changing the rules every quarter and making it even more difficult to follow. So we try to maintain some consistency. So bear with us as we go through that. You see that sales are up 16%. 3% of that is organic. End markets across all of our five major market segments expanded. We saw a particular strength in oil and gas, and hope that continues. And with the increase in oil prices, you know, certainly that's what we would expect. You know, we've also had some benefit from the long-awaited turnaround in heavy industrial, which you recall was still in decline in the back half of last year. But, you know, while there's been some softness in pockets in broader market categories, you know, specifically on the C&I lighting side, most notably, it's encouraging that we can finally see, you know, more general consistency in market growth to varying degrees, especially across some of our higher margin businesses that, you know, we're hoping to begin to contribute more. You know, and I've been out in the market recently spending time with customers, and I think certainly the market is still positive across the board. I think they all have an element of caution around the uncertainty of some of the trade discussions, but they're all still benefiting and seeing the benefit from tax reform. And so we think that'll continue to add value. On the operating income side, on a reported basis, it was $100 million, which is a margin of 10%. You know, excluding Aclara's deal and acquisition-related costs, margin was 12.3%. You know, 30 basis points lower than last year. Certainly not directionally where we want to be, but considering, you know, what we've seen as the impact, at least, you know, in the early part of the year on price cost, we're at least satisfied with that. Never happy, but we're satisfied. The rise in material costs, especially steel, certainly had a significant impact in the quarter. As you know, we're targeting offsetting material cost increases with price, but typically with a 3 to 6 month lag. And I think we're getting price in certain key markets. The net impact of price and material cost increases in the quarter was a point and a half margin for us. I mean, it was a significant deal. But we certainly expect that to, and Bill will cover that more detail, but we certainly think that, you know, the pricing actions will take it, will start to show the benefit as we progress and can certainly turn positive in the second half, sometime in the second half of the year. And I can tell you that while there's certain businesses, you know, a few of our businesses that might have been behind in pricing, I think we have found that in, there's other parts of our business where we were ahead, and others are now trying to catch up in some of those markets. Specifically, we've got some high material content markets where we were out early and no one seemed to follow. And then come 2 or 3 months later, you know, some in the industry are then coming out with bigger increases and scrambling to catch up. Behind everywhere, in some cases, we're ahead. So on balance, I think we're in a good position. But certainly more to do, and I can tell you that all of our operating leaders are fighting for that each and every day. And I think the market is certainly expecting it, but are always going to challenge, you know, any price increase. So we've got a lot of work to do to continue to put that through. You know, and this price cost headwind impact, you know, we're fortunate because we were able to mitigate some of that with the tailwinds that we have from a lot of the cost reduction actions that we've been taking over the last three years, you know, as well as ongoing cost controls, you know, in the short term to try and mitigate some of that impact. So bottom line, execution on improving that margin, particularly around price and productivity, is a priority for us. Earnings per share on a reported basis was $1.05. This includes 34 cents of Aclara related deal cost and acquisition related costs. I say that specifically because obviously Aclara has some other impacts within the power segment, and Bill will talk about that later. It also includes, those results also includes 12 cents of intangible asset amortization from acquisitions other than Aclara. So, you know, you can put those together and come up with what the total amortization is, but we're specifically focusing on an adjusted basis to address Aclara's deal activity. And of course, our earnings per share in the quarter also benefited from a lower tax rate. You know, back on Aclara, the integration's going well, and it's on track after the first 2 months. It's, you know, with all the activity, we sometimes forget that it's only been 2 months because it's certainly a lot of work to integrate, you know, a significant acquisition for us. The business performing as expected, strong sales growth, and continued positive customer feedback. I was just down at IEEE in Denver last week. I know some of you are out there as well. Hopefully you had a chance to see the Hubble booth. You could see firsthand how significant our presence is in the utility space. And more importantly, hopefully you could see how integrated and the effect of One Hubble, where you could see within the Hubble booth, the Burndy product offerings right next to the Aclara product offerings, the high voltage product offerings, and all that comes to play in that space. But specifically, when I think about Aclara and what I was hearing consistently from participants at IEEE was a very positive reaction, and in fact, a lot of the good Hubble channel partners and customers are keenly interested in how they can add that to their portfolio, which is exactly, you know, part of the strategy, confirms the strategy for the acquisition. So we think that that's really a very positive. You know, we're also seeing results in working together, you know, more examples of One Hubble, you know, outside of acquisitions. You know, one example of this is In the quarter, we won a utility order for a submersible bus connector that had specific design and delivery requirements. You know, the product, in order to do that, was made by one of our businesses within the construction and energy business. And, of course, you know, that's in our electrical segment, but it's sold by the power systems team. A really nice win for a coordinated effort across the businesses with, you know, guys like Gerben running the power business and Rod running the construction and energy business, really working together to make sure we can provide the solution to an important customer. Yeah, you also probably saw our board approve the quarterly dividend of 77 cents per share last week. That's important because I hope you recognize it demonstrates our continued focus on shareholder return and the need to drive cash generation and our commitment to effective deployment of capital. You know, we're able to repatriate about $180 million of cash and began to pay down debt as expected. I'll say, though, if you see our results, our free cash flow in the quarter was disappointing. It's typically our lowest quarter, and this year it additionally dampened by some one-time items, the timing of collections, certainly some tax payments, some payments around the Clara. But still, you know, you could look at the results, and our working capital performance certainly has a lot of room to improve. So that's the other area that we are keenly focused on, and the result we expect free cash flow will be greater than net income for the year. So with that overview, let me turn it over to Bill to go through some more of the specifics of the quarter, and I'll come back and talk about our outlook.
Thanks very much, Dave. Good to be with you, everybody. Just to highlight what Dave was saying, really four trends in the quarter that are going to be woven into our performance here. One, end market strength. Two, the commodity inflation that's coming with that market strength. Three is the benefit of tax reform. And four is the eclair of the new acquisition. So all four of those trends you're going to see everywhere in our results. And Dave really gave you the results on page three. So I'm going to start on page four of the slide material that Maria referenced at the beginning of the call. And you'll see our first quarter sales of $991 million, a 16% increase over prior year, 13% of that coming from acquisitions. And we can be quick to forget that that's not all Aclara. So Aclara is about 11 points of that. There's another 2 points coming from previously executed acquisitions earlier in 2017. And just to remind everybody, we had made an investment in the natural gas distribution space, some smaller acquisitions within power systems, notably in telecom hardware space, as well as extending our bushing product line, as well as iDevice, which is a real leap forward for us in terms of IoT R&D work that underlies a lot of our new product development. So there's actually a lot of acquisition previous to Eclair. And a lot of that's also rolling off after Q1, so you'll see really the balance of the year being dominated just really by the power systems deals. So beyond the acquisitions, you have our end markets. It's good to see a page like page four with such consistent green on it, but quite a consistent positive market backdrop for Hubbell. On the non-res side, you know, the ABI data is supportive. The starts data is favorable, and so still green arrows there in non-res. And electrical transmission and distribution continue to see the IOU's CapEx analysis suggest supportive activity there. On the transmission side, the projects are really dominated by small and mid-sized projects. On the distribution side, a lot of grid hardening and reliability spending. Again, small projects. Industrial for us, again, you did see the ISM data, the manufacturing production data, positive. As David highlighted, for us, the real switch there is seeing heavy convert from shrinking really through most of 17 to now growing. That's very good news for us, given its margin contribution, maybe a little late versus other peers of ours that you're looking at, but nonetheless, good news in the quarter for us for heavy. The oil and gas story continues to be positive. On the oil side, the commodity price firming, obviously, with land-based activity continuing to drive growth for us. And the natural gas distribution side, still very, very strong demand for that infrastructure product there. And on the resi side, household formation continuing to drive growth on the single-family side. So quite a consistent organic market backdrop for Hubbell there in the first quarter. On page five, you see operating income, and we show the adjustment here that Dave had referenced of the transaction costs for Aclara as well as their acquisition-related accounting. That $122 million relates to the 12.3 points of margin, the 30 basis point decline that Dave highlighted, and essentially we've got the point and a half of material cost headwind to overcome, as well as the acquisitions bringing additionally drag as they are coming on at lower margin than average. So you're overcoming both of those with the productivity and nearly overcoming all of it to a 30 basis point decline. Page six, we show our earnings per diluted share, and you can see the $1.13 last year, and again, we're showing the adjusted of $1.39, which again excludes the one-time transaction cost for Aclara as well as the acquisition-related accounting. The 26 cents of improvement from the $1.13 to the $1.39 is really a nickel coming from Aclara, as well as the balance being essentially split between tax tailwind as well as the legacy operations. You see that 26 cent tailwind there. As well, you see on the right-hand bar, the $1.39 down to the $1.05 as reported, those 34 cents is really split between the transaction expense and the amortization, a little bit more towards the amortization than the transaction expense. So there's a lot of movement there between those adjustments, but hopefully you see that clarity. And just to comment on the taxes, the tailwind there, we were about 29.7% last year, down to 21.1% this year. So big part of that coming from the tax reform and a little bit better from discrete items as well. So that 21.1% below the level we have forecast for the whole year. Page seven, we talk about the electrical segment, and you can see a 5% growth rate to $618 million. Organic markets providing 3% of that growth. Non-res and res both helping drive that growth, but also the oil side, the gas side, and the industrial side all really starting to pick up and helping us on the mix side, providing attractive margins in those product markets. On the operating income side, you see a healthy increase from 9% OP to 9.9. I think impressively that 90 basis points of margin expansion, absorbing more than 2 points between commodity cost headwinds as well as the investment in IoT, R&D capability. And so you really can see the impact of lighting stabilizing its cost structure through this quarter and really helping get some of those inefficiencies we had last year out and helping lift the segment operating income margins quite a bit. Page eight, we talk about power segment, and it's going to be worth just a second to go through this. power tends to be a steady eddy, and you see quite a bit of movement here. So it's worth some discussion. So you see our sales grew from $265 million to $373, 41% increase driven by acquisitions. The base organic market growing at about 3%, decent level of growth there. And so important to look at the operating income side where you see, again, all the Acclara adjustments. So basically the base business absorbed a couple points of price cost headwind. And so from that 20.8% operating profit margin last year, you see the base business operating in the 18s during the first quarter here. In addition, there was another couple of points from Acclara coming on at about half the margins here of last year's segment, and that creates another couple points of drag, and then you have the costs and the accounting taken down to 10%. So it's really that price cost that creates the top priority for Gerben going forward in terms of driving the price actions that Dave referred to and as we go forward to the balance of the year. Page 10, we showed cash flow for the quarter, and you can see that we had some one-time items that were related both to the Acclara transaction in terms of fees and expenses, as well as some tax reform payments on things that were expensed in the fourth quarter. And so excluding those items, we generated just a small amount of cash. As Dave said, we're looking to do better than that. You can see our on the depreciation amortization side, an increase there as we do more deals. But the working capital side, you see strong increase in receivables. Big contributor to that is Acclara, who had strong sales in March. The quality of that receivable base, we believe, is very, very high. And you also see at the current liability side an increase of the use there. On the payable side, it's an area, as Dave referred to, an opportunity to improve where we think those payables should be helping to finance our inventory and our growth as we grow the top line. On the CapEx side, you see an increase to $22 million. Acclara accounted for about $2 million of that, and that's a little bit lighter than what we had communicated to you at Investor Day. We had been talking about Acclara's pace based on all the R&D spending that they were doing, where their CapEx could be up around the $30 million range. But as we've spent more time inside the business and conforming the accounting with the way we have been doing our R&D spending, we're actually going to be expensing much more of that, capitalizing much less. And so that CapEx number will be less than we had communicated to you at Investor Day. So this is an area of great focus for us. First quarter, usually our seasonal low. Despite that seasonality and the one-time outflows, we still like to see that working capital performing tighter and become a stronger source of cash for us. And we anticipate that improving as we go throughout the year. We also wanted to show on page 10 EBITDA. We used this first at Investor Day back in March and got some favorable feedback from everyone that it's a helpful measure to help neutralize what's going on with taxes and interest and amortization. And so here in a simple schedule, you can see 12% growth in EBITDA in the quarter from 132 to 148 million, or $16 million improvement. And I think we'll keep providing this for everybody, and we certainly use it internally. And the amount of generation here in first quarter consistent with the seasonal contributions to the goal, as we had showed you at Investor Day, of about $730 million of EBITDA for the year. I was going to ask Maria to comment on the cap structure on page 11.
Sure. Thanks, Bill. We ended the first quarter with $216 million of cash. Approximately 90% of this was held outside of the United States. The decrease in cash from year-end was because we repatriated about $180 million of international cash and used it to pay down commercial paper, which had increased from year-end as a result of borrowings for the Aclara acquisition in February. We ended Q1 with $149 million of CP outstanding. There are a couple of new items related to financing the Aclara acquisition. We added a prepayable five-year Term Loan A for $500 million, as well as a fourth tranche of long-term debt. And as you can see, all of our long-term senior notes have attractive rates in the low to mid threes. So these additions, along with the higher CP, increased our debt to cap to 56% from 39% at year end, reducing our leverage by paying down CP and the term loan is one of our capital allocation priorities. At the bottom of the page is our $750 million credit facility, and that backs our commercial paper, and it's fully available to us. Let me turn it back over to Bill.
All right.
Sorry.
It's okay. I'm going to just give some closing comments here. I think first on, you know, on our outlook. And if you look at the market, you know, with one quarter completed, you know, this year is so far shaping up pretty much as expected, although admittedly some of the material cost headwinds are greater than we anticipated. But the combination of, you know, positive markets and some of the other activity benefits of our cost reduction actions are going to help to mitigate that, and we're working to get the price. But I think as we look at the end markets, we think most of our end markets are still anticipated to perform at the levels, you know, that we have forecasted from the beginning of this year, you know, going around, you know, all in the, you know, 2-4% range, non-res, maybe a little bit lighter than some of the indicators on that, you know, just suggest that it's not as robust, but still growing. And I think, as we mentioned earlier, the upside that we're expecting a little bit more positive results is in the oil and gas, particularly with the price of oil increasing. So, you know, the good news is continues to be consistent growth across all of our end markets. Turning to page 13, you know, specifically on the outlook. So, you know, that end market growth, you know, translates in, combined with acquisitions, translates into top line growth of 15 to 20%, which are big numbers for us, you know, by historical standards. You know, the end market embedded in that is in the 2 to 4% range. The acquisitions add about 15%. And then our new product development and focus on technology is going to drive some modest market outperformance. You know, all of that leading to, you know, us maintaining our original guidance on diluted earnings per share of 610 to 650 reported, and on an adjusted basis of 695 to 735. You know, that adjusted excludes the Aclara acquisition-related and transaction costs, but it includes our legacy intangible asset amortization of about 50 cents. And as Bill mentioned, I mentioned earlier, we're working and we expect to deliver free cash flow greater than net income. So I think, you know, when I think about, you know, in sum, we're benefiting from U.S. tax reform, lower taxes, ability to repatriate cash, pay down debt. And even after 2 months or so of completing the largest transaction in our history, we're even more excited about the prospects of what we can offer to our customers. The outlook has a lot of moving pieces. But the objectives for this year are very clear for us, capitalizing on the market growth, which is there, and we need to make sure we take full advantage of that. Getting price, which we are doing, and it's easier with differentiated products. It's harder in some of the commodity space or more competitive environment, but we're getting price, and we expect to continue to get price. Spending appropriately on the actions that will support long-term growth. We've got to make sure that we're continuing to invest in the future. Obviously, generating cash to pay down debt, but also to reinvest in the business. And then, obviously, integrating Acclara effectively. So I think there's a lot of things going on. We certainly are focused in those key areas. And I think, the team and I laid out our vision for 2020, back in March, Investor Day, with sales growth at twice the market over the next few years. We certainly have line of sight to high single-digit earnings growth in the base business. And then you add Acclara's contribution to that. I'm quite confident we're doing the right things to make this vision a reality. And it starts with this year's performance, which we expect to be a very strong basis for that ongoing vision. So with that, let me open it up to questions.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star, then the number one. We will pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. And your first question comes from Christopher Glenn with Oppenheimer.
Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Dave. The called out the lighting margins being up. That certainly looks pretty good in the context of the industry. Just wondering if you expect to be able to continue that through the balance of the year.
Yeah, Chris, it's really driven by cost management. From the volume side, lighting was down about 3% with about a point of price contributing to that from the sales perspective. So it's really coming off the backs of more effective cost structure, which, yes, continues throughout the year. So, hitting our plans and our guidance is not dependent on big volume. It's dependent on us controlling those costs, which we feel much better about than we did last year.
I also think, Chris, there's an element of really more price discipline, and some of that being just what business you're going after. The other, and some of that even goes to a focus on those businesses and those product offerings where we have a differentiated advantage, because obviously, as I mentioned earlier, those are the areas across our entire portfolio, not just in lighting, where you have more ability to get price, to offset some of the cost headwinds, and naturally, those are higher margin businesses too. So that's another area of focus within the lighting business that we see.
Sounds good. And then if we look very wide-angle lens at electrical margin, in 2011 to 14, you did 14 to 15% margin. That was before the oil and gas crash, but it was also before you had a pretty intensive restructuring program. So I'm just wondering if there are any kind of barriers to ultimately returning to those types of levels for electrical.
Yeah, I think that the role that the oil and gas business played in contributing to that is important. And so they're obviously not back at that level. As we come back, we're seeing more land-based rigs rather than the deep water. We're seeing more diverse, i.e. less pure oil for harsh and hazardous. So I do think, Chris, I could see as we go forward, as harsh and hazardous volumes come back, that their margins could be a little bit lower than the peak in that era that you're describing. And at the same time, our goal would be to find productivity and other things to get back to those levels. So those are good motivating benchmarks for us to get back to them.
Okay, good caller. Thanks.
And your next question comes from the line of Steve Tusa with J.P. Morgan.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Morning, Steve.
Yeah, I was at the T&D show. Sorry, I missed you. And I don't know. I got the sense that the pricing was a little bit slower to come. But you sound very confident on that front. Is there something I'm missing? Did you guys are there different pockets? You know, are there more specific pockets of your business that you're seeing, you know, better price put through than maybe I would have picked up at the show talking to, like, you know, perhaps Transformer guys or some of the other guys that are there? Just a little more color on the confidence, because you guys are typically conservative and you don't go out and kind of say stuff that you're not really seeing, you know, on the ground level. So I do trust, you know, what you're saying. I'm just curious as to what may be the differences.
Well, I guess we could start with, you know, slow is a relative term. You know, you might have expectations of timing that's different than ours. So my confidence is based on, you know, what we're seeing in some cases is signs that, one, the actions that we're taking, two, the signs of acceptability, not necessarily on the utility side. I mean, the utility side has, you know, has certainly put more pressure as the utilities are under pressure from a cost standpoint, particularly on the OEM O&M side,
yeah.
But even on the capital side. So I don't think that what you heard at the show is necessarily out of line with what we're dealing with. You know, when we talk about pricing, I think it's certainly I can be more bullish on the C&I side.
Yeah.
We're getting some of that. The utility side has got a little more challenge in it. I mean, and I'll remind you that, you know, from our business, I think you guys used to give Gerben a little hard time over the last year because for a number of years he was saying, you know, that it's coming, and we've been able to hold price in a commodity weaker environment. Well, the commodities turn, and the utilities remember that in some cases. So it's a tougher battle. But I think we also believe that we have a bit of an advantage versus, for example, a transformer market where it's a much bigger spend, so a lot more price sensitivity versus some of our component products that are critical and lower element of a project cost. So it gives us a little bit more flexibility, but don't get me wrong, the utilities are still pushing back as much as they can.
Okay. That makes some sense. In the electrical channel, what are the degree of price increases that you're seeing? I know, you know, Invent was out there talking about, you know, they're on the enclosure side, obviously, so, you know, a little bit different. But you know, they're talking about a you know, obviously, kind of a mid single digit type of thing that they're putting through. I mean, is that kind of the magnitude that all you guys are looking at on the electrical side of the equation?
On average, I'd say that's true. You know, somewhere in the 4 to 6 on average. I mean, we have pockets, though, that are, you know, working on 8 to 10, you know, if they've got a lot of higher material content, which, you know, sounds bad, but it is what it is. But I would say on average, it's in the, you know, mid-single digit.
Okay, and then one last one. I probably should ask this at the Investor Day, but the Aclara CapEx that you guys are running this year, and I think you said next year as well. I mean, is that something that, you know, is, you know, kind of builds up here in the next couple of years and then fades over time? Is this kind of a not necessarily one time, but more lumpy? And so that could, you know, that kind of fades out into the kind of later in the decade, kind of 2020 time period. I believe it was like, you know, 15, 20 million bucks of CapEx.
Yeah, I think it starts, Steve, with the R&D effort, right? And so, you know, we had showed you, R&D spending sort of in the 10% of sales kind of range based on last year's sales. and the amount of R&D that's going on there. So that's obviously significantly higher than a typical Hubble business. There's a question of how much of that you expense versus how much you capitalize. And I think we're going to end up expensing a little bit more than they have historically done. But nonetheless, I think what happens is that $50 million does not grow, but what happens is your sales grow, and so your percentage of R&D comes down, is I think how we're imagining that playing out over the next few years.
Okay, on the CapEx side as well?
Yeah, so CapEx then becomes a function of how much of that R&D you capitalize, which would not be growing, and then how much is on the PP&E side, which would not be growing at anything beyond, just replacement stuff and,
okay,
and needs for growth, yeah.
Great. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks.
And your next question comes from the line of Rich Kwas with Wells Fargo Securities.
Good morning, guys. On Aclara, anything on seasonality we should be thinking about as we go through the rest of the year in terms of contribution?
Yeah, I think we do expect some seasonality, Rich. Similar seasonality to what Hubble experiences, namely that second quarter and then especially third being the stronger areas of both volume as well as margins for them. As I said, when we were together, we had been planning that their margins, would be mid-teens. And I think after reviewing some of this R&D that Steve was just talking about, we'll expense a little more. So we think their margins will come down to lower double digits. But they only were operating kind of at double digits in the first quarter. So we do anticipate seeing their volumes and margins pick up in the second and third quarter.
Does that change the longer-term prospects for margin for the business, the accounting change around expensing? I mean, can this be mid-teens to high-teens, or how should we think
about
that?
I don't think it materially changes our long-term view, no.
Okay. Bill, on lighting, what was the margin rate? You exited the fourth quarter around 10, if I recall correctly. Did you duplicate that again this quarter?
Yeah, it was the cost base is just performing much more in line, much more predictably. And so those kind of margins are where we are. As Dave said, I think, we're finding that to even try to maintain share of commercial spending, you might have to chase with too much price. So I think we're choosing to forego a little bit of that volume and let that cost structure perform and get the margins going better, which is what you're asking about. So that's been kind of a decided tactic of ours.
Okay, and then just level setting on price cost, the 200 bips on power and then the 150 for the overall company, is that just the commodity headwind or is that net price cost? And then is the assumption that that improves as we go out, Q2, Q3, Q4? I mean, just so that we're all clear on that.
Yeah, so for the whole company, the price that we pulled, X lighting, was offset by essentially what that point that lighting gave away. So the net price cost is essentially material cost because pricing was flat overall. And yes, I would say that as the year goes on, we're anticipating that the second half, and that's part of, I think, underlying some of Steve's question too about does it get better? It gets better in the sense that it becomes more balanced in the back half, especially as we exit the year, you think maybe you start to catch up. So that's you can't, with this much inflation, you can't catch up overnight, but you got to be vigilant and really be disciplined about it. And so I think it'll take us the whole year to fight that battle.
Okay, thanks.
And your next question comes from the line of Jeff Sprague with Vertical Research.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Morning, Jeff.
Hey, just back on power pricing in particular, Dave or Bill, are you getting none currently, or is there some positive price in the business?
Yeah, we have been getting price, Jeff. Yes,
you have been. Okay.
Yes.
And just to be clear on Aclara, can you just put a fine point on what you actually expect the ongoing amortization to be in the year?
Yeah. So if you use the last page of the outlook, which is page 14, you can see that we're anticipating Aclara contributing about 50 cents to the total, and that 35 of that, that 85 is the add back. So sorry, 35 is the combination of the transaction and the reported results. And then, Maria, within reported, the amort versus the actual OP split for Jeff.
Yes, sure. So in all of the intangible amortization, which includes the inventory step-up and the backlog revaluation, we would expect this year to be something around $45 million. So you can, convert that into the 45 to 50 million. So I think it turns out to be somewhere between 60 and 70 cents.
Okay. And then on cash flow, I think your comment free cash flow greater than net income is relative to, GAAP net income. But should we expect your free cash flow to be closer to the adjusted EPS? I mean, arguably it could even be more than that with still 50 cents of non-cash legacy intangibles in there, but yeah, you obviously have some working capital and other noise.
Yeah, I think the way that we're looking at it, Jeff, and that's really why Dave gave you that 50 cents of legacy intangibles. So I think if you saw the $7.15, which we were guiding to on an adjusted basis, when you add those next 50 cents of legacy intangibles, you get up to about 765, and to us, that cash EPS is quite an important measure because we think free cash flow, even though we think of it as net income and percent, but there's an important relationship there. So our expectation would be this year, Jeff, on a run rate basis, because we did have some abnormal first quarter outflows. But on a run rate basis, we think you should be talking about kind of 110% of net income of free cash flow this year, which would translate into the mid-80s on that higher cash EPS of the 765. And then our strong focus would be on using working capital management to get more efficient there and get that conversion on the free cash flow basis higher in subsequent years. So I think that framework that you're talking about is important to how we as management look at the free cash flow conversion equation.
And is there something specific you're doing on working capital to uncork it here? Putting aside some timing noise in the quarter, but what's going to change to drive working capital going forward?
Yeah, I think you're right about the noise in the quarter, and receivables are the kind of thing. Our quality of receivables is very high. Collectability is often very high. So those do become the most timing sensitive, as you point out. So I think our opportunity is in inventory and in payables. And the inventory, I think you all at Investor Day met Susan Hooperts. We've hired a new VP of Ops, and we're excited to be working with her and figuring out and developing ways to really get more focused and more disciplined around getting our inventory days down while keeping our service up. And then on the payable side, becoming more, I think, more disciplined too about how to optimize when you're taking advantage of a discount and when you still have some term days, left. So when you see a quarter like ours where payables were a use while inventories was a build, you know, that's a good sign that I think we need to be more disciplined there, Jeff, you know.
Yeah. And just one last one from me. Dave mentioned a little bit, but any change in customer behavior now that you own Acclara as opposed to a private equity firm? Any change in discussion, backlog, pipeline, anything you'd point out?
Yeah, I think we've seen evidence that the pipeline is growing. The feedback we've got from our customers has been favorable. I think what's been exciting for Dave and me to see is the cooperation at the front end of the house between Gerben's sales force and the Acclara folks. And really, there's been a couple examples of some selling efforts where we've been trying to sell our legacy hardware to some of their rural customers. And conversely, we've had some larger IOU conversations where, you know, we've really helped open the door for their communications business. And in those cases where we've been getting our clients together with a broader suite of products, we've received good feedback. It's too early to say of any tangible, quantifiable, you know, impact of that, Jeff, but I'd say those early signs are good, and I think more towards the back of the house, it's been interesting watching, you know, the rest of our company get to know and understand what the technology inside the Acclara comms can do and how maybe that can help make other parts of Hubble smart and communicating. And so I think you're at the very, very early days of seeing if 1 + 1 equals, you know, more than 2. But the signs, I would say, are encouraging.
Great. Thanks a lot, guys.
And your next question comes from the line of Joseph O'Shea with JMP Securities.
Hello there. Just a few from me. First, Maria and Bill, just to clarify, you'd mentioned that you had this $500 million prepayable paper. Should we expect perhaps not to see any buyback activity until at least some of that gets paid down? Some color there would be helpful.
Yeah, I think that you know, we continue to always evaluate the uses of cash. But I think your and share repurchase could be a very viable use. But I do think you're right to assume that priority-wise, you know, on a kind of a four-year glide path, we're looking to pay off that CP and that term loan. So that I think you're right to assume that.
Okay, the CP and the term loan over a four-year glide path.
Yeah, I mean, CP will be, you know, what serves as our overnight kind of funding source. So at any quarter end, you might have some CP, but those are good gauges to think about how much free cash flow the next 4 or 5 years we're looking to pay down.
Okay, great. And then secondly, as regards yet again lighting, I'm wondering if we can get a sense as to where the pricing has been really less palatable versus where you've been more able to hold the line. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I think as David commented, for us to have 1% of price in the quarter is actually a better experience than we've been having. And I think it's there are some projects with some more commodity products that you know, would lend itself to use price to go chase, you know, the volume. I think there's an opportunity for us here that we've shown in the quarter to be a little bit more selective about which projects.
I meant in terms of end market. I was just wondering I didn't ask the question well. And in terms of which end markets you find yourself being able to hold the line a little more. That's what I meant. Sorry.
Well, if you're saying between non-res and res, you know, I think the pricing is a little bit firmer in resi than it is in non-res, if that's what you mean. If sub-slicing non-res, I don't think you could generalize too easily.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, adding to that, within the C&I markets, you know, the challenge is in those projects and those offerings that are non-specified. or where our representation isn't as strong as a competition, right? So if we have good representations, we have strong representations in a market, whether it's a vertical or a geographic, it's easier to maintain price than when you don't. And that's more how it plays out.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
There are no further questions. At this time, I would like to turn the call back over to Ms. Maria Lee.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. So that concludes today's call, and Steve and I will be available all day for questions.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your participation. You may now disconnect.